Tiger Nation. I am Byron Hulsey, headmaster at Woodbury Forest School, and I would like to welcome you to the Woodbury podcast series. This podcast consists of informal yet substantive conversations with alumni, faculty, staff, and students. The conversations explore how Woodbury's core values empowered alumni to build a solid foundation for their lives, how those core values are taught today by Woodbury teachers, and how those values are put into practice by today's students. Thank you for joining us, and we hope you enjoy. Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to the Woodbury Podcast. Fortunate today to have Dr. Tiff Jones with us. Tiff has been on the Woodbury campus several times now and has most recently been here at the start of our faculty meetings for this school year. And I thought it would be fun to have a conversation with Tiff that highlights some of her passions as it relates to the world of interscholastic athletics and some of the opportunities she sees out there for young folks as they navigate the challenges and the opportunities for competing in high school athletics and beyond today. Tiff has also had a significant role with our coaches, encouraging them to grow and develop and to understand the importance of mental well-being for all of us, but especially in this case for athletes. Tiff, welcome to the Woodbury Podcast.
Hi, Byron. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, you're great to be here. Let's just start with maybe you sharing with our listeners a little bit of a bio of you. Where did you come from? How did you get into this world that you now inhabit?
When I was 15, I knew I wanted to do something in sports, but the med route wasn't probably going to be my route. And I, you know, then the Jerry Maguire movie came out. And so did I want to be a sports agent? And that didn't seem to be my calling based on what you would have to do to be successful. So my dad found a book in the bookstore written by Dr. Shane Murphy. He was one of the first sports psychologists to work with our Olympians. And back in the day, and I know for any younger listeners listening to this, some authors would put their phone number on the book. And so Dr. Murphy lived in Connecticut. I was living in Connecticut and I called him up and talked to him on the phone. I was a sophomore in high school and I kind of knew that then right from there, I didn't know the path that I had to take, but that was where I knew I wanted to be, you know, in the world of sports psychology. And so I went to Hobart and William Smith for my undergrad and then Springfield College for my master's and doctorate. And so the difference kind of between sports psychology is I went the mental performance route. So though we are well versed in mental health issues and how to refer out, I'm more on the biomechanics, ex-science, psychology end of things. So really seeing how our thoughts impact our performance. So that can be in sport or any kind of performance related area. That's the difference between sports psychology and mental performance coaching. And so I see myself more as a teacher or coach, and I don't have to just sit in a room to do what I do. I'd rather be out at practices. I'd rather be in the midst of, you know, what is going on in the student athletes' heads or the coaches' heads, and how is that impacting performance?
As a young person, you were also quite a competitor, right? So give us a little bit of detail there.
I would have been really well served to have someone like me back in the day. I think that's why I knew I was a swimmer early on, and man, I would get in my head big time and results and expectations. And so as I got better and better, my joy and then the fun in the sport decreased. And then I found my true passion, which was soccer, but I played multiple sports growing up, basketball, softball, tried a bunch of different other sports, but really soccer I knew was my, cause I always wanted to do it, right? It could be a blizzard outside and I was going to go outside with a ball and try to find time to practice, where if it was swimming, I would do anything to get out of practice. I'm like, oh, yeah, it's snowing, we can't get to the pool. Yes, super competitive. I was not allowed to play games, board games, and games with family members after a while because, you know, there would be boards flipped or I'd be trash talking loved ones and just anything to win, at almost win at all cost. So yes, I could have used someone like myself back in the day. I learned to harness it a bit more playing college soccer. Yeah, I probably needed a lot of work.
When you were at Woodbury this fall or early, late this summer, as we were getting ready for the start of our school year, you shared with us a particular moment that was very important in your growth and development with your own high school coach. And I was just thinking it'd be great if you shared that with our listeners and just get everyone to kind of think about the dilemma that your coach faced and how it felt to you and why it's resonated with you all these years later.
So first of all, I went to Loomis Chafee, which is a New England boarding school up in Connecticut. And honestly, it was such a pleasure to be at Woodbury Forest because I see so many faculty, coaches, staff that represent so many of the people that I had influenced me when I was at Loomis Chafee. So first of all, anyone who's listening, you're in a great spot being at Woodbury Forest. There's not a lot of places I go and I'm like, wow, there can be a lot of growth here and a lot of teachable moments. And yes, uncomfortable. And yet that is the biggest opportunity for your students to get ready for the real world and how do you deal with, different uncomfortable things. So I wanted to put that plug out there because it's like really an amazing place and campus to be on. I had a coach, his name was Chuck Vernon. He recently passed. He went to Dartmouth, was a hockey coach, football player, lacrosse player, had no lick of soccer experience whatsoever, especially working with females. And he was the varsity coach. And we called him Bruno. He was my advisor for almost my entire time at Loomis. He was very much like he was a competitor, but it was going to be done the right way. We were not going to sell our soul, so to speak, just to win. And so there were a lot of life skills that you were going to learn if you were going to play on any of his teams or be an advisee. Going to a game, I was a day student and I got a call from one of my teammates. This is back when there were only landlines. And she was like, my parents aren't here. I don't know where they are and I can't get to the game. And so she lived in a few towns over. So my parents let me make the decision, like, we will go pick her up, and yet you're going to be late to the game. Or we can leave like we were going to leave and you'll show up on time. And then she's not going to probably be able to get to the game. So first of all, my parents gave me that I was the one that was going to decide that. So I'm in my head going, what would Bruno want me to do? And what have we learned as teammates is no, I'm not going to leave a teammate home. So I was going to be late. And we went and picked her up, and sure enough, we were late. We were probably late by 2 or 3 minutes, and yet the team was already walking down to the field from our pregame talk. I was never late. I was always early. And so Bruno knew that. And if I'm late, there was a reason. And he saw that I had my teammate with me. And yet what he did is he benched me the first half because I was late. Of course, I'm in my head, this isn't fair. I did the right thing. What is going on? I'd never been benched in my life. And honestly, like, it was not the end of the world, and yet it felt like the end of the world in the moment, right? And so I played the whole second half. Our team won, which was the most important thing. My parents knew why Bruno benched me and yet didn't agree with it. I did not know that at the time. Like, they were like, if you have an issue with how Bruno handled it, you go into his office on Monday morning and you have a conversation with him. And I did. And Bruno was like, listen, I knew there was a reason you were late. And yet I wanted to send the message to the team because being late has become an issue. And I knew if I benched you, it would send a message to the team that I'm even willing to bench Tiff, even though she always does all the right things. I didn't like the decision. I still didn't agree with the decision. He explained it to me. I valued him. My parents, I told them the explanation, whether they agreed with it or not. They never called him. They never did anything. I lived 30 years of my life thinking my parents were all on board with what Bruno did until later on. And they're like, no, we disagreed with him. And yet it was a good life lesson is that you can make all the right decisions. You can do all the right things based on your morals, values, and ethics and not get the result you want. And yet, would you have done it differently now knowing you got benched the first half? And I was like, no, I'd still go pick up my teammate. And it was a great lesson that I learned and carries. I still think about it. I'm always going to do the right thing based on my morals, values, and ethics. And yet I may not get the result I want from that. And yet I need to be able to look at myself in the mirror at the end of the day and be proud of who I am and stick by that. So I find that we don't allow those lessons to be taught as much anymore, right? So now if a Bruno made that decision, parents are calling, they're calling the head of school, they're calling in the National Guard, so to speak, to like save their child. And yet that happened when I was 14, 15 years old, and it has carried me my entire life. That lesson, it wasn't just one lesson, those lessons that were taught by Bruno and that my parents allowed Bruno to teach me.
Just to kind of set the scene for our listeners, Tiff shared a good chunk of that narrative with us at the beginning of our faculty meetings and asked us to visit with our colleagues about, about what we would have done and whether or not here at Woodbury we would have been supported the way Bruno was supported And the truth of the matter is that by and large, we would have been supported by our parent community. I can't say in every case a parent would have supported the school like Tiff's parents did, but in general, our parents trust the school to do what's right, even when we as parents may disagree. And I certainly understand that I've got a daughter in boarding school, and not everything that her school has done would I agree with, but you have to put it into context. Now, what I love about that story is that at a young age, Tiff learned that values are expensive. And if you're not willing to pay for your values in the form of a loss, they're not values. They're just rhetorical conveniences. I really, really appreciate the story, not knowing exactly what I would have done myself in Bruno's shoes, but really appreciate that the message was that there's no one bigger than the team here. And the team's bigger than everybody. And the team is bigger than the sum of its parts. And that is an awesome life lesson. And in the world we live in today, it's not rare, it's not widely held when we think about how important the individual is at each and every turn.
Exactly. And I love what you just said, Byron, about the values. They are expensive. They do, like, you do have to. They're really your values. And that's Bruno. Those were his values and morals and ethics. Same with my parents. I mean, I think that's such a big thing for us as adults is sitting in our own discomfort, right? We
Yeah.
see a child or a student that is really uncomfortable, and then we have, if our identity is attached to them in any way, so a parent, of course, or a mentor or something, and we see a student athlete or a student struggling, and it's hard. We want to swoop in and save the day because we know how to save the day, and yet we have to sit in our own discomfort, knowing that this is a good lesson, and that it also is going to be okay. Like me
Yeah.
missing the first half of a game, guess what? I was okay.
Yeah,
Like it was an
right.
okay thing.
Yeah, you know, it's a great thing because I'm always reminding myself and others, other adults in the Woodbury community, that the school is for the boys. It's not for us. And St. Andrews, where my daughter goes, the school is for the students, and it's not for me as a parent. About her experience, not mine. One of my favorite people, one of my favorite heroes is Carl Jung, the Swiss psychologist, who said that a child's greatest burden is the unlived life of its parents. And so
Yeah,
many
my
times
parents
as a
teacher.
parent, you know, I just need to get out of the way and let it go. You know, Claire was God's child before she was my child. And
Great
that's
way
not
to put it.
easy. It's not, you know, it's not natural, but it sure is important. Your story was great. And this look, again, there's no perfect answer there, but it's a great story about, you know, a moment that has stuck with you for a long time. Tiff, tell us a little bit about your work now. How do you spend your days? What are the biggest challenges that you face? Kind of the most common pitfalls that you see? What are you finding the most success with as you work with coaches and competitors?
So my days look different every day. A positive that came out of COVID for me is that we realized that we can do individual sessions and team sessions virtually and have those be pretty successful. I used to travel every day of the month almost, and that wasn't healthy for me. And so now it's virtual. I do travel and I'll go and have touch points on campuses like I did with you and the Woodbury community, which is awesome. And yeah, so a lot of it is virtual sessions, individual with all different athletes, all different sports, all across the country, sometimes across the world, professional, all the way down to the youth level. And sometimes it's having, a lot of conversations. I spend a lot of time with coaches because I'm not there and the coaches are one of the biggest teachers, obviously, for student athletes. And so it's really helping coaches understand today's generation of athlete and student and giving them and providing them the tools that I've seen work the best with student athletes and teams. It is hard. Everyone wants to knock this generation, and you've
Yeah.
got to learn how to accept who they are. If we had grown up with a computer in our hands,
Oh, gosh.
we too would be just like they are. Let's
Yeah.
just maybe worse. I think I would be
Yeah.
worse. I'm not gonna lie. Being able to go and socially compare yourself in 2 seconds, nonstop, being flooded with information, and our brain's a muscle, and our brain doesn't have to work as hard.
Right.
Byron, they don't know what a card catalog is
Yeah, I
anymore.
know.
It's in a museum. They have card
Right.
catalogs in museums now. They don't know what microfilm or microfiche
Right.
is. Like it's and the amount, think about like the amount that we had to do just to find a book in a library,
Right.
right? And the steps that it took. And so our brain really had to work, and the brain doesn't have to work as much now. And so it's accepting who they are. There are strengths to this generation, and it's looking for those. And then it's the growth areas, and it's getting, you know, coaches get frustrated that they can't execute, you know, XYZ as a sport. And I'm like, yeah, but they don't have the baseline foundational skill, and we're trying to jump them
Yeah.
multiple steps down the road. And so it's getting coaches to say, okay, so you want this product at the end, and yet we got to meet them where they are. And then look at how they're improving, you know, step by step.
Right.
We know where they could go. We know where we want them to go. And yet, where are they now? And how do we move them incrementally along? And again, every student is different as well. And so I think coaching is one of the hardest jobs right now.
Yeah, right.
There's so much out of your control. I think it's why students sometimes now lean into to academics. I would have been like, oh, my homework's done, so I could go to practice. Like, there is no shot that I would miss practice. And now I find students are like, no, well, I really got to go study. And you're like, what is going on? How do you not want to go to practice? Because there's more safety. There's safety in academics because the core syllabus, a rubric. I know if I do this, I'm going to get some sort of grade within this range.
Yeah.
Right? Sports, I could do all the things and still not get the result.
Yeah. And you're exposed in the arena.
You are. And so it's super uncomfortable for athletes and for coaches to be in sports because there's so many things that are out of your control, and that's scary. And a lot of times we're not aware of that. We're not conscious of the why this feels so scary, and why do academics almost feel more safe? And it's not because your students don't care about academics. And yeah, I don't know about you, Byron, but I might have an exam and I'll figure out how I'm going to study for it when I'm going to practice. If I love the sport, you're going to go to practice, right? So that's where I start to see that. And I think coaches sometimes get frustrated because obviously your coaches especially care very much about the academics, and yet we call them student athletes. And it's like, okay, where's the athlete piece? Are they not really committed? Are they not as committed as, you know, previous generations? They just are scared. There's just so much on the line nowadays with getting into the schools that your students want to get into. And everyone wants to say, you've got to step into this little kind of box and stay in the box if you want to go to an Ivy or an NESCAC or UVA or, you know, any of the schools that your students are looking to go to.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot more comfort going on in academics, believe it or not, than sports.
Yeah. That tracks with some of what I see, and I want to acknowledge on the front end that memory is a tricky thing. So I'm not 100% sure that what I'm saying is correct, but I do remember clearly that when I was a boy at Woodbury, many more of us played three sports happily. Many graduating seniors graduated having played three separate sports at the varsity level. That's very rare now. Not exceptional, but quite rare, especially three different sports. You know, you might have a boy who runs cross country, track, track, but you know, it's not, you know, necessarily things like football, wrestling, baseball, you know, three very separate sports. So we're seeing, you know, just like you're seeing around the world, you know, the focused kids are hyper specialized. Then it drops off kind of from there. And there are fewer kind of good high school athletes who want to play three sports and just have fun with at least two of them, you know. That kind of makes me sad. I see less joy in the world of interscholastic sports than I remember as a kid. And it's like, you know, in some ways, JV basketball is the last pure domain left because everything's so serious. You know, when you get up to the varsity level, you got to perform.
Breaks my heart. And what I'm really seeing too is that I'm telling the number of injuries.
Yeah.
When I play college soccer and girls, women's soccer is one of the biggest ACL torn sports. We had two in 4 years, two. And it was, they were sisters. So probably a little genetics going on there. Two ACL tears in my entire 4 years at school. Now I can see five ACL tears in a preseason in college student athletes. And you go, why? Well, because they have 28-year-old bodies by the time they're 18 and not in a 28-year-old frame.
Is that because they've specialized?
They've specialized and They're playing so
Overtrained.
much, overtrained. I love soccer, and yet I couldn't wait to play basketball. And I didn't love softball, but I love playing for my school, and I played softball. And then I would go two-thirds of the year and not touch a soccer ball. And it allowed me to have even more joy when I got back to soccer. And so the only time I ever committed to just soccer was when I was 18 to 22 years old.
And your body was
And
different.
body was different. And I'm watching, and there's ACL tears in all these sports, all sports, men and women. And it's because they're playing multiple, like take a soccer player. They're on two or three teams. They're playing four games a weekend. We know physiologically that is virtually completely not what we should be doing. And they're training 4 or 5 hours or 4 or 5 days a week. And they're doing that almost all year round. And clubs, of course, are going to tell you you have to do that because they want money. They don't care about your kid. It is up to you as a parent to say enough is enough. They're not playing on multiple teams. They're not playing more than two games a weekend. They are taking time off. And yet, this is what we're
It's a funny thing. So I'll element for that right here. I'm not a lacrosse guy, but so I have kind of made my way through and around and seen like some of these summer league lacrosse competitions, these competition weekends. I'm sure it would be the same with baseball. But I remember once driving into Woodbury. We were hosting one of these summer lacrosse tournaments, and I remember driving up the hill after a game, and the players were walking off the field, and I did not see a single competitor who was happy. They were just dragging ass and head down. It was hot. They were gassed. They weren't happy. They were there because they felt like they had to be there in order to get the look that they needed for college. And there've been Woodbury boys who've graduated knowing where they're going to play college lacrosse. And one of the greatest things for them is they don't have to play summer league lacrosse for the first time in forever.
And you want to know who else looks miserable? The
Oh, the
parents.
parents are, because it's so damn hot and they're just sitting there for hours. Hours.
Miserable.
I don't know. I mean, I know how all this dynamic works, but I'm thankful that I it, whatever. I just loved sports growing up, and I'm sad in part because I don't see as much joy widespread at the varsity level of just playing, competing.
Because results now is
It
everything.
matters so much.
Matters so much. And the expectations that are being put, and I always explain it to everyone is we were never built to run towards fear or to
Yeah,
run
that's
towards
right.
danger.
Fear is a very, very dominant emotion. If you feel it, it's very dominant.
And we are meant to run away from the burning building. And why do sports feel like the burning building? Because of the expectations, and because expectations are future focused and not typically really in our control. Our brain is thinking future because what if I don't play well? What if I don't get a look? What if we don't win? What if my coach is disappointed? All the what ifs, and there's the fear. Because as soon as you start saying what ifs, it's fear, it's future focused, and our brain is going to want to fill in the gaps. Because we are still like cavemen, cavewomen, cave humans, right? And we had to fill in the future gaps to keep alive in the non-modern world. Now that we're in the modern world, what is really attacking us isn't a saber-toothed tiger, isn't something that could kill us. But it feels like it could kill us, is we don't know what's going to happen and all the fear. And so we are actually asking athletes and coaches to run into a burning building and perform in a burning building without the tools to still perform in the burning building. We were meant to run away from the burning building. And
So
so that is
all of
something.
that, I think, is made worse by social media.
Oh gosh,
And it
yes.
makes, another thing that's heavy and hard is, how much time a young person has to spend essentially kind of whoring themselves out on social media to
Oh my
any
gosh.
potential suitor. It's very, very heavy. There is still joy, though, out there. Tell us a little bit about the best advice that you give to coaches about how to kind of manage this dynamic with the color-coded counsel you give us.
What I love to do, and it gives coaches a lot of information, and it all starts with self-awareness. Like if the athlete doesn't know what they're thinking and feeling, then there's not a lot of hope that we are going to be able to support them. And one of the ways to get athletes to be a little bit more aware, and it does require vulnerability and bravery. And we think mental toughness is like, suck it up, put your feelings down, run through a brick wall. We know more now. We know that the thoughts can impact the biomechanics and the physiology, and also the cognition and the cognitive recall and the prefrontal cortex in terms of logic. And so we do have to get athletes to be more aware of, like, what are you thinking? How is that impacting? And so one way to do it is I have like three mentality zones. One is red zone. Red zone is when we all know red. Every competitor is going to go red zone. We're not trying not to go red. It's we want to get, if we're in red, it's knowing it and getting out. But red zone is the fight, flight, freeze. It's the fear. It's anxiety. Everyone's red zone, though, can be different. You can have the fighters who lash out, blame, make excuses, start yelling at teammates or coaches yelling at the guys, or it can be upset, crying, like being scared. And then you can have the people who kind of disassociate, the freezers, who like almost like they're overthinking so much that they become paralyzed in their own bodies. So any of those behaviors are signaling they're in their red zone. So it's not that they're not trying or they're not focused or they don't want to execute. It's because they're in their heads and they don't know how to get out of their heads. And then watch out. Blue zone is the optimal zone. Blue zone is like, it doesn't mean you execute. It doesn't mean that you don't make mistakes. It's present focus. It's what can I do right now? How will I do it? It's being able to adapt and take the information that we're getting from mistakes and being able to quickly be able to apply it in present time to make corrections. So blue zone is often where we will say the athletes will say it's fun zone. It's high energy. We're giving feedback and yet we're looking for the good as well and praising the good. So athletes, especially younger athletes, will say that's the fun zone. And then there's green zone. Green zone is that lackadaisical kind of tired, just going through the motions. And we all can go green zone. Like, I mean, every human can start daydreaming, and that doesn't mean they're not committed. Green zone's dangerous because that's where bad habits are formed, you know. And so I'd rather no habits and bad habits, because once you have a habit, it never goes away until you override it with a better habit. And so there is danger in allowing a team to train or play in the green, because now we're developing bad habits. And again, it's just recognizing I'm in red or I'm in green, and like, how do I get back to blue? And so by being able to get athletes to know what their red is, to know what the green is, and then know what it is in their blue, now we can start saying, okay, now what are the hows? That's the mental skills. So like, now what are the tools, the routines? How do you get from red and get back to blue? How do you get green and get back to blue? And that's coaches as well.
That's for
Coaches'
sure,
job is to
coaches.
be blue zone. And why? And when coaches go red zone, they're sabotaging their teams, because they're creating a red zone environment for athletes that don't really have the tools to get out of their own red that they've created, let alone an environment that is created by a coach of red. And you know, coaches create red zones not intentionally often, but that's where they're like, you've got to do this, and you're like, you've got to keep the ball on frame, and you're like, really, coach? That's thanks. I didn't know that. You know, it's the master of the obvious. It's this cliches. It's that fear of, if I make a mistake, I'm going to get yelled at or taken out of a game kind of thing. So.
I wanted to get your take on the recent Ryder Cup from your perspective, with your training and with your like observation. I'm thinking about not only the play and the strategy and the execution on both sides, but also the fans and the atmosphere there.
Well, the fans created a huge red zone environment. I actually think it created a red zone environment more for the US players, to be honest.
How
Because,
so?
well, you would think, because they're trash talking, you know, the European side, right? You would think, oh, good, this is like home court advantage type of thing, home course advantage. I think it actually was creating more distractions. I think we got more into what the fans were saying, and it got us too up, too like this. I will say Europeans train more on the mental side of the game than we do. They have for many, many years in all sports. And so I think they knew what they were going to walk into. I think some of the things that the fans were saying were even jarring for the Europeans. There might have been some overstep, especially because golf is supposed to be the gentle person's game. And yet the Europeans knew what was coming. Even though it teetered a little bit, I think they had more skills. I think they gave energy to each other and created a bubble of blue zone around them. And I think rather than the Americans coming together and forming a blue zone, they thought they were going to play better by absorbing That, but because the fans were so negative and so outrageous, that's still red zone energy. And I think it actually backfired for the Americans. And I think the Europeans trained for it, were prepared for it. And what they do is they insulate themselves as a group. I think in our capitalist society, we're meant to be like individuals. And it's harder for us to come and be a team for a golf event where the Europeans tend to thrive in that team environment.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And well, I love the color-coded zones. I mean, it's good counsel for you mentioned highlighted the importance of athletes and then just now coaches, but it's teachers too. It's
Yes.
really all leaders,
All leaders, yep.
and
And
parents.
energy, people feel energy. And so I can feel like if you're like on edge or you're upset or whatever, and it doesn't mean you can't be human. And yet, if we're asking our athletes to get out of those zones and get back into blue, like what are we doing as adults to model that? It's not that we don't go red and get frustrated or that we kind of start thinking about what, we need to pick up at the grocery store after practice. It's just our job is to get back there and model that for the younger generation.
Yeah, it's so similar, I guess, to like working out. And if you work too hard, your heart rate's going to get to a place that's unsustainable, and you got to back it off and get to the place where you can really flourish and
Yes.
grow and thrive.
Absolutely. That's a good way to put it.
Well, the color codes are terrific. Tiff, thanks so much for being here. Do you have anything else you want to leave with us? You've given us a lot to ponder and a lot to think about. One of the things that's on my mind that I keep marinating in is the challenge that we all face, not just young people, but us adults too. The way that modern life robs us of our attention. And
Yes.
how difficult it is to flourish and thrive when our attention is so diminished by all the distractions out there that are poking on us. You're a reminder to me that I need to focus a little bit more on the big picture and not get distracted so much. So thank you. What parting shots do you have for us?
Just the biggie, and I'm not anti-phones and I'm not anti the device. It's just knowing that every time we pick up that thing in our hand or a beep goes off or a notification goes off, our cortisol levels spike 80% more, which is the stress hormone. And so a lot of times our athletes or even us as adults, what do when we are uncomfortable or are in our heads or are trying to procrastinate for something? We unconsciously just pick up our phone. And then our brains are like going like crazy, and our cortisol levels are skyrocketing. And so when we put the device down, our dopamine levels, which is the feel-good hormone, that's why we stay on the device, is because it masks the elevation of our cortisol. Then our dopamine levels crash. And so what do? We feel worse. And the reason we got on the phone in the first place is still there with an elevated cortisol level. And so it's just, I'm not saying not to be on it. It's just knowing that we're on it, it actually is hurting our mental health. It is increasing that fight, flight, freeze state. It's creating the fear and the anxiousness. And so again, for me, a lot of times it's when you go to reach it, just say, why am I getting on this? And how long, what's my purpose, and how long am I going to stay on it? So just adding a little bit of the consciousness to it, because that honestly is probably the thing that is really hurting our overall performance, because it's attacking our psychology, our psychological state, and our emotional state without us really knowing how badly it's sabotaging us. And so it's just doing that. I'm not saying not to be on it. It's just, even if you have the consciousness of why am I picking it up, what's my purpose, and how long am I going to stay on it?
Tiff, thank you so much for all you've done for Woodbury. I hope we can stay in touch, and I really appreciate you being on the podcast. This was fun.
Thanks, Byron, so much. And everybody, just know how special of a place Woodbury Forest School is. It's pretty great. There's not many places out there that even come close to the experience that you provide for your faculty and your students and your athletes and all the other kind of performers that are on campus.
Well, we hope we live up to it one day. So thank you.
You're
Thanks so
welcome.
much, Tiff, and thanks to everybody for listening. Go Tigers.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Woodbury Podcast. We hope you found our discussion insightful and engaging. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please consider subscribing, rating, or leaving a review on your favorite podcast platform. Stay tuned for more conversations in the future. And remember, the conversation doesn't have to end here. Connect with us on Woodbury Forest School social media, reach out with your questions or comments, and let's keep the dialogue going. Until next time, take care and go Tigers!